All right, now we're back on the KVON Morning Show. It's 8:09, and quickly checking out the markets once again. We've entered into one of those down days, and the Dow is down a lot, down a little, down a lot, down a little. It's down about 388 points at the moment. That's 1.5%. The Nasdaq's off 2.1 percentage points, and the S&P's down 1.8%. So far, kind of ugly on Wall Street in the first hour and a half of trading. Traffic-wise, we've been watching problems over around the truck scales and the eastern end of Jameson Canyon. Right now, nothing new has developed, so those previous accidents are getting cleared. Don't see any new problems shaping up. Weather-wise, cool start to the day, pleasantly warm afternoon, but not real warm, about 73 for the high today. Currently, we're at 42 with some fog at the Napa County Airport. You're up to date on weather, traffic, and the markets, and the time now is 8:10. In our next segment, we continue our visit with Napa City Council candidates. We're trying to talk with each of the six candidates this week, 2 weeks out from Election Day. And next up, Mary Louros joins us here in studio. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Let's begin with one of the bigger news stories of the campaign so far, and that's the Napa Valley Register's endorsements of this past weekend. You were the only candidate out of six people running to get the endorsement of the local paper. How did you feel about that?
Exceptionally humbled. It was really, really exciting to read that. I can't believe that that was what they chose to do. It you know, there's a lot of ups and downs in a campaign, and to have that kind of validation was really important. It felt great.
Mm-hmm. They did cite the fact that you served almost 2 years when you were appointed to fill a vacant seat.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that that's given you an advantage in campaigning in terms of an understanding, perhaps, that a challenger struggles with, having not sat there and looked at the issues?
Absolutely. I mean, having experience both on the council and having the experience of having run a campaign before, I think have been really, really helpful this time around. You know, I like to kid around and say that I know how the sausage is made. I know the good side of the city, and I know what the problems are. I've been on the inside. You know, I've seen the management style that we had when I was on the council, and I see the new management style, and I can kind of see the benefits of having Steve Potter now as the manager, and it's really exciting to see that. But yeah, I have a better understanding of all of the issues because not only have I had to answer questions about them during the campaign, but I've voted on a lot of these things. You know, I've had to make those tough decisions. When you're a new candidate and you don't have that experience, it's easy to say what you think you want people to hear, or to make political sort of, you know, maybe kind of answers. When you've been in the office, you know, you have to make those tough decisions. You have to have an opinion. So I'm actually somewhat better, I guess, of a politician having gone through all that.
Mm-hmm. In terms of campaigning, there's something brutally personal about all of this. And I've heard other people in elected office who are still in office, some who are not any longer in office, talk about how exposed you are, how mm-hmm. vulnerable you are. I mean, it's you. It's not a character you're playing. It's you. It's your name. Your life is on, you know, out there in public display.
It's also important, though, to have that vulnerability. I think that when you go through a campaign, you have to learn to have thick skin because everyone's talking about you. Some of it's true, some of it's not, and people say some pretty horrible things. But it gets you ready for office because when you're on city council and you have a room full of 100 people who are all your friends and half of them want you to vote yes and half of them want you to vote no, you have to be able to make that tough decision. And I think going through the campaign process and being vulnerable and having to develop that thick skin really does prepare you for that.
Mm-hmm. Come back to the topic of the endorsements for a second. The Napa Valley Register makes an endorsement. They're a journalistic entity. There's no potential quid pro quos when media makes endorsements. When you get an endorsement from Firefighters Association, Police Association, groups like that, unions that represent the employees, there can become questions. Does that mean that there's some kind of preference, some kind of deal making going on behind the scenes.
Right.
How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a very valid question because people have been asking that, you know, what does it mean to have the firefighters behind you? What does it mean to have the police behind you? And I can tell you the only promise that I make to anyone is that I have an open door. So if you have something you want to talk to me about, I'm open to hear it. You want to talk about PLAs, I'm happy to talk about it. If you want to talk about the Linda Vista Bridge, I'm happy to talk about it. But just having the endorsement of police and fire doesn't guarantee that I'm going to vote a certain way. And they understand that. They know that. They also know that they need strong leadership in place to protect their interests.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are contracts coming up for negotiation among mm-hmm. the major unions that represent all the employees. The negotiation can get very difficult from the management perspective when there's a lot of cash. And the city has a lot of cash coming in from transient occupancy tax particularly. Do you foresee some challenges in that negotiation process going forward?
You know, it's balancing. It's just like everything else. We've got to balance the future. You know, we're probably going to have an economic downturn. I'm looking at the market right now. It's not looking hot today. We have to anticipate that things aren't always going to be rosy, and we have to plan accordingly. But we also made a lot of concessions the last time the economy went down. And I think some of our employees feel that still today. I don't know that they feel like they've been made whole from that process. We also have a really big challenge in bringing people to Napa, to filling our positions that we have. We have a lot of turnover right now. Department heads are leaving. We don't have people coming up in the ranks to fill those positions. We're not attracting the best and the brightest. And the way to do that is by making it more a better package for people to come in. So not just more salaries, but housing vouchers, childcare, forgiving student loans, things like that. There are other things that we can do to attract employees. And I feel like the city right now is not taking a strong leadership position on that. And we're feeling the consequences of that because we're not able to provide services to our citizens because we don't have those people in place. You know, we don't have enough people in public works. We have all this money from Measure T, and we're struggling to get the roads fixed. Police department, we have several positions that are open, and we had two applicants for the last opening. The fire department has 200 applicants. So that says a lot about what we're offering to our employees. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not a situation where we have to give up a bunch of money for salaries. It's not a situation where we have to hold the purse strings and give them nothing. It's just we have to balance it. We've got to look long term.
Let's talk about one very specific proposal that's sort of a testing place for some thoughts about where we are downtown and growth and development of downtown. And the specific thing I'm thinking about is the post office hotel, for lack of a better way to describe it. I think everybody knows what we mean when we say that. Planning Commission looked at this last week. They like it. It looks like it's on track. Something has to be done, of course, with the damaged post office. We know that, a redevelopment of it in some case. Do you think this hotel proposal is right for downtown as it is? Are we getting close to having, as people say, enough hotel rooms? What's the future of downtown look like if you're elected council?
Yeah, so this is the biggest challenge that we're facing right now, is just balancing these needs. For years now, we've been approving every project that comes through the town, not considering what are the impacts on the community, not giving it that holistic look. We just see that hotel room rates are going up, 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 and they're staying up. And so people say, oh, well, we must need more hotels. And we're not thinking about the traffic, and we're not thinking about the housing. And we have to stop and balance that. Having said that, balancing it doesn't mean stopping development completely. You know, it means making smart decisions. I think our hotel developers need to find more effective ways to add to our housing stock. And we have to find ways to balance the needs of our residents. But specifically that project, I really love that building. I want to see us fix that building and save it. If you remember, it was on the chopping block, and it was very close to disappearing completely. And we had somebody who stepped up and said, no, I want to save it. And this is really the only way that it pencils out to save it. There are lots of other things that everybody would love to see there, but that's not how this works. You know, we can't say, let's put an ice skating rink in the post office building. That's not going to pay for it. We've got to come up with the money to be able to save the building. So a hotel is probably the only way that that happens. Having said that, you know, we still have to figure out the housing. We still have to figure out the traffic and the parking and the other impacts to the community. That project specifically has a garage as part of it. They purchased the garage from the city that's behind Bilko's, and the plan is to put a parking garage in there. And it's one of those kinds that looks like a vending machine where it picks up cars and, you know, puts them in. It's very fancy and high tech. So that's, you know, a pretty good way to control that impact. But I still don't know what they're planning to do with housing. How are they going to house their employees, and where are they going to find their employees? Because you walk down Main Street or First Street right now, and there's a lot of help wanted signs. You know, people are really having trouble finding employees, skilled workers. So these are all things that need to be considered. But I'd like to see that building saved. So I would support the project, but I have a lot of cautions at this point.
Mm-hmm. Just prior to you, when Liz Alessio was here, she made a reference to there being possibly another 1,250 hotel rooms that are already in the pipeline that are approved. Is that mm-hmm. accurate?
Yeah, I mean, there's also a lot of housing that's been approved. I mean, look at Napa Pipe. We have a lot of projects that get entitled and then they just sit there, because a lot of it has to do with our process through the city. Getting through the planning department is really challenging, mm-hmm. But also the economy. I mean, we don't know what's happening right now with the economy, and you know, it's a big risk to start a project like that if the economy is about to tank.
So what you're saying is, because that many hotel rooms are approved, doesn't mean they'll get built.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What if they all do get built?
Oh my God. Then we're in trouble. If they all get built at once, then I think we're gonna have a lot of growing pains. There are projects that have been sitting there for a long time, 10 years or more. I don't see them all being built at one time. But there are things that we can do to also kind of control that growth. Mm-hmm. Just getting through the planning department and getting your permitting and things like that, we can kind of control the flow.
Mm-hmm. I suppose the bottom line question that pollsters use, you know, are we on the right track? Mm-hmm. You know, do you feel that the path that was laid out going back to maybe the mid-90s about hotels downtown and this increase in tourism, is that the are we still on that track? Should we stay on that track? Do we need a course correction?
Well, you know, the problem is, a long time ago, people thought that they could control the development of our community by not increasing our infrastructure. They thought, well, we'll just, you know, hang on close to everything and not let our infrastructure grow. The problem is, we've had the growth anyway, and now we don't have the infrastructure to support it. So now we have to kind of take a step back and say, how do we fix the problem that we have, and then also solve the problem going forward? We're just not there right now.
So when you're out knocking on doors, and that's what local candidates do, right? You go door to door and
thousands of doors.
Mm-hmm. Before, you know, it's interesting because what we may be thinking about, what I may be thinking about, what you may be thinking about as the primary issues may have nothing in common whatsoever with, you know, Jim Smith and Jane Smith in a neighborhood. What are you hearing as you're going from neighborhood to neighborhood?
It's funny that you say that, because I would have said that was true in the last election. But this election, I think people are really paying attention. They're saying the same things that I'm saying. They're saying housing. They're saying traffic. They're saying growth, and how we need to really balance our community. I'm not hearing much beyond that. People are concerned about the Civic Center, of course, but that's also a big election issue right now. And people are just generally concerned about our direction that we're headed.
Hmm, really?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Civic Center project. The question that you have to pose to everyone at this point is, if you don't like the current proposal, and if you agree that the city has a problem in having old buildings with a lot of maintenance needs and employees and departments scattered all over town, mm-hmm. if you agree with those premises and something needs to change, but you don't like the current proposal, what is the proposal that would work? Do you have some concrete ideas?
Yeah, I do. So I just met yesterday with the vice president of Plenary. That's the development group that's putting this project together. And I had that exact conversation with him. And it was a little awkward, because obviously he'd like to keep going at what they're doing now and keep the train on the tracks. And I had to say, you know, I don't see that happening, depending on how the city council looks. Let's talk about what we can do to lessen the burden on the community, the financial burden, just the scope of the project. Let's talk about how we can bring it down. And we had a pretty good conversation. I talked about, you know, kind of the bigger picture things about maybe not having swing space by just building the city hall somewhere. That would save us a lot of money, about $15 million just from the swing space, we don't need to move the fire station. We don't need to have temporary fire and police stations and then build permanent ones. There are a lot of things that can be done. We don't need the fourth floor. Right now, the project has a fourth floor that would be empty, conceivably, maybe rented out if people, you know, if somebody wanted to come in and do that. But it would be for expansion down the road. Kind of a big cost to add to it. There are just a lot of things that have been added to the project that I think could be deleted. The biggest hurdle is going to be not so much what it looks like in terms of building, but how we finance it. The idea all along has been, well, we're going to build a hotel on the private side. We're going to put in housing, and the hotel TOT is going to pay for the project. I've never bought that as really what we're doing, and so it's going to take some unwinding of the rope to kind of pull that out of it and get people thinking about, no, we're actually borrowing money. And there's different ways that we can pay that off in the future. But we don't build a hotel on one side of town and say that we're going to pay for government services with that. You know, it's just not how we do it. When we built the fire station in Browns Valley, we didn't say, okay, that was $5 million. We're going to pay for it with a hotel over here. It's just a very odd way of financing a project. So I think that's going to be the biggest challenge, is figuring that out. And as time goes on, construction costs go up. It gets harder and harder to make this happen. And I think Plenary is really feeling that pressure of, we got to get this, we got to figure out where we're going, wherever it is, and we got to get there before the cost becomes so out of line that we can't do it.
Mm-hmm. And the other mitigating factor is, as you were saying, if the economy shifts, and we saw this with previous hotel projects where the former Ritz-Carlton project, maybe the most notable, it was entitled, it was ready to go, the economy changed, they can't borrow the money for the project any longer, and so it sits. It still sits there today. The city could end up in that same scenario because of entering into this sort of developer world rather than just being a government function. Mm. And the old-fashioned way would have been to go to the community and say, we need a new city hall, we're going to put a bond out. Mm-hmm. What do you think of that idea? Is that off the table to approach it that way?
I don't think anything's off the table at this point. I think that the train has been moving for a long time, and it's going to be difficult to slow it down and avoid crashing. That is what I would like to do. I'd like to see us simply borrow the money and build a building. I think that's the easiest, simplest way to do it. It's still going to be very expensive, and I think people are going to have problems with that. But we need a new city hall. We need a new police station. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's no guarantee that, you know, that the hotel's going to be built right away, that it's going to start making money right away. There's no guarantee of anything. And that's why it's so challenging to get behind the financials as they've been presented.
Mm-hmm. You do have a variety of valuable pieces of real estate that could be sold to cover some of that cost.
I hate that idea. We have a lot of property downtown. Once you sell property, you don't get it back. And I think it would really be unfortunate if the city sold all of their property. Mm-hmm. I think we could do ground leases for a lot of it and protect that land. Just from a business owner perspective, I would hate to see us sell that property.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're talking with council candidate Mary Luros. We just have a minute or two left. Have you been surprised by anything in this race, rather either from what people are saying or asking when you're out talking to them, community groups you've met with, other candidates? Have there been surprises?
I'm surprised every day. Just the general dynamics of this race are so different from 2 years ago. The last race when I ran against Scott Sedgley and Doris Gentry, it was just the three of us. Very, very different race than this. The biggest surprise has been how involved people are. People are paying attention. Different groups are putting financial support behind candidates and really getting involved in the outcome of this. And I think that's exciting. I think people should be involved in politics. And I can't help but think of what it's going to look like 2 years from now, the next election, and how crazy that's going to be. Because, you know, if Jill doesn't run for mayor again, if Scott and Doris say run for mayor, that's two open seats. So we have the potential of having an entirely new city council in 2 years. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of exciting things coming up. But mm-hmm. Yeah, the biggest surprise, I think, has just been how much people are paying attention to it.
Yeah. It's a little disturbing, just personal thought. Some people have referred to the professionalization of politics in Napa County that's been taking place. It's been gradual, and it's been seen more on the county level mm-hmm. than it has at the city level. But this time around, with the race starting so early, mm-hmm. more than a year, was surprising to a lot of folks. Do you think that's the future for us now? Will we be in constant campaign mode from now on?
I hope not, but I do think that is the future. I mean, I started working on the campaign, I would say, early last summer. By September, I had announced. October, we had the fires. November, I had my first campaign fundraiser, and I was 9 months pregnant. And I remember thinking, wow, I'm really doing this 9 months. My baby's due in a week. I'm doing this 9 months pregnant. And just looking at the past year, how much has happened. It's been so much work. It's really a full-time job at this point.
Yeah.
And I do think that that's the way it's going to go.
Full-time job with part-time wages. Sounds like radio.
Exactly.
I don't know. All right. Mary Luros has been our guest, candidate for Napa City Council. Thanks for making time to come in today.
Thanks for having me.
It's time for a break. We're scheduled to talk with Esther Mobley after the break. Esther's the wine writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, and we're going to find out about that big Masters of Wine scandal. Stay tuned.
We must all work together to be better prepared for wildfires. I'm Joe Segura, and I work in emergency communications at PG&E. As an additional precautionary safety step, PG&E is urging customers to sign up for alerts at pge.com/mywildfirealerts. We can alert you if we need to temporarily turn off the power because of extreme fire danger conditions. We know how important it is to have safe and reliable power in your home, so we will only turn off the power as a last resort. Please sign up today at pge.com/mywildfirealerts.
I returned from combat duty in a wheelchair, but it turns out many apartment buildings can't accommodate me. I fought for freedom and thought I'd be free to choose where I live.
After the phone interview, we assumed the apartment was ours.
But when we showed up, the manager said no longer available.
The only way to stop housing discrimination is to report it.
Please call Fair Housing Napa Valley at 707-224-9720 or visit us at napafairhousing.org for more information.
Okay, I have to tell you about this. A few days ago, I really needed several thousand dollars fast. So I called 844-7-LOAN-ME. I've used loan companies before, but Loan Me was different. First of all, my agent was very calm and clearly explained everything about the loan. He said I didn't need perfect credit and I didn't need any collateral. Okay. He said I could make fixed monthly payments or I could repay it at any time with no penalties or fees.